a central question that obsessed me for a long time is, what is the origin of these words in Aboriginal reverse speech? In other words, what is the origin of Hindu words in Aboriginal reverse speech? I became a really big fan of Joseph Campbell. I got as many books as I could written by this man, and tapes and videos, and he seemed to provide many answers to what I was looking for. Here is a recording of Joseph Campbell talking.
Now, what do you make of that? That in two very different cultures, the same imagery emerges.
Yes. Well, there are only two ways to explain it, and one is by diffusion, that an influence came from there to here, and the other is by separate development. And when you have the idea of separate development, this speaks for certain powers in the psyche which are common to all mankind. Otherwise, you couldn't have, and to the detail the correspondence identified, it's astonishing when one studies these things in depth, the degree to which the agreements go between totally separated cultures.
Which says something about the commonality of the species, doesn't it?
Well, yes. That was Carl Jung's idea, which he calls the archetypes of the collective unconscious.
What do you mean by archetype?
An archetype is a constant form, a basic fundamental form which appears in the works of that person over there and this person over here without connection, and the expressions of the structure of the human psyche.
Here is an extract of a tape that I made 8 years ago. I enthusiastically embraced what Joseph Campbell was saying and endeavoured to draw parallels between Hindu and Aboriginal myth. Here is the recording.
Comparative mythology also reveals similarities between Indian and Aboriginal people. Some Aboriginal Dreamtime stories parallel Hindu myths. The story of the rainbow serpent Bolong, for example, parallels the Hindu story of the cosmic serpent Ahi. According to the Hindu story about Ahi, Indra, the fighter of demons and the sky god who controlled the weather, granting rain to those who pleased him, slew Ahi, the cosmic serpent. Ahi was the fearful serpent of drought. He had swallowed up the cosmic waters and lay in coils on the mountains. Indra sent a massive thunderbolt which split his stomach, releasing these waters so that they could generate life. This parallels the story of Bolong. Bolong, the rainbow serpent, was lying on a large plain rather than a mountain. An old woman told some Aboriginal men that if they speared this serpent, creation would continue to unfold and geographical features such as billabongs and rivers would be formed, together with trees and rocks. After several attempts, the serpent was speared through the back, and fluid poured out of the wound to generate life and geographical features. Ahi was resting on a mountain. Bolong was on a plain. Ahi was pierced by a lightning bolt, Bolong by a spear. Fluid came out of both Ahi and Bolong to generate life.
Yeah.
Another link in myth is the sacred circle. The most sacred symbol in many Aboriginal groups is the sacred circle, which features in rock art and bark paintings. In Hinduism, the sacred circle is important and is...
Also, 8 years ago, I began to explore the idea of oral tradition. Oral tradition is the process whereby knowledge, often religious in nature, is passed from one generation to another generation. This process is most evident in oral or non-literate societies. The key medium by which this happens is speech. The form where this may occur varies from campfire tales, drama performances, ritual and dance, and so on. In oral tradition, as it applies to reverse speech, metaphors and various religious words that are metaphorical and maybe not metaphorical are learnt in the same way that any other language is learned, through listening and speaking. At the heart of tradition is the idea that the appearance of these words are not a result of manifestation of innate knowledge or a manifestation of something from a deep structure of the psyche. No, the key idea of oral tradition is that these words are learnt as speech develops. Their source is external rather than internal. A person like Gandhi, who we heard in a reversal earlier on, may have a sufficient impact upon people for him to be adopted as a metaphor in their reverse speech. If this usage spreads sufficiently, that is, if it is used by a wide variety of people, then it will continue from generation to generation in reverse speech. This is the idea of oral tradition. On the other side of the coin, a person like Hitler may have a negative impact, a really huge negative impact upon humanity, sufficient enough for this person to be adopted as a metaphor for something that is negative or for evil. And likewise, this usage will be passed from generation to generation in the activity of speech. So the storehouse of metaphors are ever present in the world of speech. This concept is in direct contrast to the ideas of Carl Jung. Carl Jung's idea is that there is a storehouse of mythological knowledge present internally within the human psyche, and these myths or these mythological elements manifest in the psyche when the need arises. Moving back to Aboriginal reverse speech, I wondered whether a unique oral tradition could account for the appearance of Hindu words in their speech. Obviously, this would need to have a starting point, and this starting point would have had to have some element of diffusion from elsewhere. Diffusion is the process by which cultural traits or complexes of one society or ethnic group are borrowed by another, resulting in their spread from a center of origin to other distant geographical areas. In about 1990, I came across the ideas of the American anthropologist Joseph Birdsell. I came across this fella in a book called Triumph of the Nomads, written by Jerry Bain. This book is about Aboriginal culture and Aboriginal people. Birdsell visited Australia just prior to the outbreak of World War II. Like many other Europeans, Birdsell had the notion that all Aboriginal people were the same. Within 14 months, he changed his view completely. He observed that the physical features of Aboriginal people varied considerably from region to region. To account for these differences, he formulated a hypothesis that there were three waves of Aboriginal migration from different regions of the world. He presented his findings as a Harvard thesis in 1941. The third wave, according to Birdsell, settled in Arnhem Land in the northern region of Australia and northern Queensland. These people were tall and thin and bore resemblance, according to Birdsell, to Dravidian tribes of southern India. In 1967, Birdsell published photographs of Aboriginal people and selected Indian people that bore remarkable physical similarities. These visual similarities formed the core of Birdsell's thesis. The idea of an Indian origin for Aboriginal people in Australia, however, is not new. As far back as 1869, the famous biologist Thomas Huxley entertained the idea. The 1910 edition of the Encyclopaedia Britannica suggested a Dravidian origin for Aboriginal people, noting that some South Indian tribes used boomerangs and had similar canoes to certain Aboriginal groups. Last century also, Bishop Caldwell, the Bishop of Madras in India, pointed out that there were strong similarities between Southern and Western Australian Aboriginal languages and the languages used by Indian fishermen. Unsurprisingly, with all of the interest in these connections, scientists have undertaken extensive research to verify links. And unfortunately, for those who argue for an Indian link, the findings of these scientists do not support an Indian origin hypothesis.